Hello, this is the BBC World Service. Welcome to Egypt's Challenge. I'm Shaima Khalil.
I'm in downtown Cairo in Talat Harb Street. This is the heart of Cairo, just 3 minutes away from Tahrir Square, where the Egyptian Revolution erupted 2 years ago. In the last few months, hundreds of people have been killed in the ongoing violence that still grips my country. Egyptians are frustrated and many are very angry. But listen, this is not the sound of anger. This is the sound of people on their way to watch a comedy show. Yes, a comedy show. This is a new phenomenon that has taken Egypt by storm. In the second program in the series, in which I look at the challenges facing my country 2 years on from its revolution of 2011, I'm going to be listening to the new voices in Egypt. There's always been a lively and diverse media in the country, but under former President Hosni Mubarak, the state closely monitored all forms of political and religious expression. Now all of this has changed. Not only has there been a proliferation of satellite TV channels, but what's being said on them now is new, and millions are watching.
She tries calling me a lot, and I don't have time to answer, so I'm very sorry.
I'm so flattered that you ignore me.
Shaima, you're a friend, you should know.
Yeah.
The man failing to flatter me is Bassem Youssef, probably the most famous political satirist in Egypt now, based in one of Cairo's most famous landmarks, the Classic Cinema Radio Theater. And he's giving me a tour.
Oh, this whole building was built in 1939. This is actually the projector room of the cinema. It was a replica of the Radio City in New York, and it was just some cinema.
And now you're almost rewriting the history of this building.
Hopefully. Oh, the story starts from that big room there.
This is the control room.
And this is my lovely team. You see, that's my research team.
Hey, guys.
Hi, guys. BBC Radio.
Hey. It's a big team.
Yes.
You look very busy.
Very, huh?
Bassem Youssef does what satirists do. He pokes fun at political figures, and he sails close to the wind, even targeting the president and religious leaders. No one has ever dared to do that before. Believe it or not, he's a heart surgeon by profession, starting his show just after the revolution from his bedroom, broadcasting it on YouTube. Things have moved on since then.
A bunch of vibrant young people in front of computer screens, on the lookout for fresh material for Bassem to make fun of.
They give us basically a list of what's happening in the world, and we get the material and we see what's going on, and we're controlling the world. Moving on.
So basically, this is the first time that a political satire archive is being created by your team now.
Yes, and it's actually the first time to have a live TV show ever with real audience. That just came out.
A recent presidential jibe, however, was a jibe too far, and he was briefly arrested and released on bail. The charge? Insulting Islam and Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood president, Mohamed Morsi. It hit the headlines around the world, with questions raised about the new government's willingness to tolerate free speech. The government was quick to distance itself from the whole affair, insisting that it remained firmly committed to freedom of expression.
What would have happened if you guys existed during the Mubarak era, before the revolution?
None of this would have existed during the Mubarak's era, you know. The revolution has served all of us well. Not just me, also the Muslim Brotherhood, even the people that I attack. You know, so what the revolution did is just like it's opened the doors for everybody to express himself. Well, that's democracy. And hopefully we're on the fun side of democracy.
And here's a taste of what Bassem does.
Dr. Hisham Andil said a lot about Ummahat Masr. استفز البلد كلها والستات بالذات بالذات مكتوبه بالزين ليه.
What you're hearing now is a sketch about remarks made by Prime Minister Hisham Endil. He'd made a comment about poverty in Egypt, saying that some women in rural areas pass diarrhea to their infants through breastfeeding because of their quote unquote unclean breasts. His comments caused uproar and offense in Egypt. But they were perfect material for Bassem Youssef.
Did I say it? I mean, the Prime Minister said it.
You
it's the Prime Minister gave it to us.
My mom, she looks at me, she's like, what? Did he just say
this?
And she laughs
about it. Should he just do this?
And she'll be happy about it.
Obviously, not everybody's happy because you had lawsuits against you because the prosecutor was investigating.
It's democracy. It's 90 million people. I've been watched by 30 million people in this country. Not everybody will be happy, especially if you're attacking them every day. That's democracy. Hello!
But there will always be a ceiling. There will always be a limit. You can't actually talk about many issues.
So where's your ceiling?
You cannot actually speak about religion that much. You cannot speak about, like, sexual stuff that much. You can do insinuative jokes. The limits has been broken in this community already. I didn't break the limits. The other people in power have broken it. I mean, the ceiling has been broken by other people. I'm just observing.
But are you trying to get as far as you can? Are you trying to push the limits all the time?
That's comedy. That's satire. You always try to push.
If you find this program offensive, it's because the political life is offensive. It's not a cartoon. It's not a Jim Jam program. And politics is dirty. Satire is naughty. What do you expect? If you're talking about some that might be a little bit offensive or obscene, what about what's happening in the political scene? Everything is obscene. If it's life, it's shocking. It's because political life is shocking. You speak about breastfeeding and you're actually leaving everything else. I mean, the whole political scene is a disaster.
Hi, I'm Shaima.
Hi, I'm Ahmed Al-Ghazali, segment producer working with Bassem.
So what are you doing?
Well, basically, I have 5 researchers in the team. And I mean, the current topic is, for example, that the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafis are fighting together now. And then when we gather them all together, we go and sit with the creative team and discuss how we can start the scripts and write about it for the program.
And when you gather this material, like, for instance, what you were saying about the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafi, I mean, this is very, very serious, dry material. How do you get the comedy out of it?
Well, I put them in sequences. For example, the Salafis have said that. The Muslim Brotherhood have said that. The liberal channels have said so. And we start making a story out of these.
There's something very Egyptian about it, isn't it? Because people always say that Egyptians are very good at laughing at their problems, at laughing at themselves. And this is what basically you guys are doing.
Yeah, exactly. We reach the people through something that's been there forever, and we're making people question all these things.
What difference do you think this has made in the country at the moment?
It has made people think differently. I mean, a lot of people just take everything on television for granted. And we're bringing people, liberals don't usually see the Islamic television, and the Islamic television don't usually see the liberals. So we're bringing all these people together and just making people think.
Hey, I'm Shaima.
Hi.
I'm Miral.
Miral, tell me what you're watching.
Working on...
Miral is looking at Islamic channels. She's watching El Nes.
Yes.
What else are you watching?
I work on Morsi speeches, anything related to Morsi. So I have to watch him a lot.
And how does that make you feel?
What do you think?
I want you to tell me.
I don't know. I think that sometimes I feel like I'm very pity on this country because none of the things he has promised, he didn't achieve anything from it. I always laugh on his speeches.
One of the stereotypes about a program like this is that it only represents liberal Egypt and it's not really representative of the real Egyptians. But, you know, you and I are pretty real. We're two Egyptian women wearing the hijab. And
I do believe that I'm serving my religion because I just do believe that I'm helping people to know the truth about these people.
How is that helping Islam?
Because millions of people are watching these kind of channels and they do believe them to the bottom of their heart. So when I work with Bassem and try to show that these are not good Islamic figures to follow.
I want to know what working here means to you personally, Miral.
It's a turning point in my whole life because I got to know more different levels of peoples and I've got to know how to react to what I see. So I'm helping myself and helping my country. It's a very good thing.
I'm just walking out of the Cinema Radio Theater in downtown Cairo and thinking about those comments by Miral. Very interesting. What a remark. She said that working on a program like Bassem Youssef serves her religion, serves Islam. And I think it's also just a reflection on the newfound freedom in Egypt, this freedom to question everything, to not take things for granted. It almost feels like you walk into a movement, a new way of thinking, a new way of viewing things. There was a saying that if Egyptians weren't able to laugh at themselves, they would have been extinct. So one of the things that endure, really, apart from the Sphinx and the pyramids, is Egyptian sense of humor. And this is something that
couldn't have existed before the revolution. This whole program couldn't have existed before the revolution. Another thing that couldn't have existed before the revolution was the type of channels that Miral was watching, and these are the hardline Salafi channels. The small studio of the Al Hafiz channel is in Egypt's media production city on the outskirts of Cairo. This big compound has long been home to a wide range of Egyptian and Arab channels, from news and entertainment to Islamic ones like Al Hafiz. On this channel, it's not humor that attracts audiences. It's conservative Salafi rhetoric, where presenters and guests often call for an Islamic State and Sharia law in Egypt. In February this year, Al Hafiz caused outrage when a Muslim scholar said live on the channel that according to Islamic teachings, members of the opposition should be killed. The government took that threat so seriously that it ordered 24-hour police protection for key opposition figures. Dr. Atif Abdel Rashid is the owner and main presenter of Al Hafiz TV.
There was a big controversy on your program when one of the sheikhs, Sheikh Mahmoud Shaban, said that it was okay in Sharia to kill the opposition. What do you think about that?
He didn't say that. He didn't say that Sharia dictates the killing of Al-Baradai, Sabahi, or the National Salvation Front leader. Let me explain. He said this was a general edict that is in Sharia law that says whoever rebels against or opposes the leader or the imam or the emir of the Muslims, he should be fought and defeated. This is undisputed. And any scholar will tell you this is true.
Do you not see how inflammatory this is? You have millions of viewers. And when those millions of viewers see a sheikh, a scholar, say that it is okay in Sharia to kill the opposition, they're going to take what he says quite literally.
Our media are liars and misleading. They have no religion or morals. They took the first minute and a half of that interview and judged it on that. Mahmoud Shaban also said that for this to apply to Al-Baradai, Sabahi, or the National Salvation Front, we need our scholars and government and our judiciary to determine if they really rebelled and offended Dr. Mohamed Morsi or not. We had a clear discussion around the fatwa and that it shouldn't be left to anyone to determine. We don't call anyone kafir or infidel, and we don't condone an individual to take it upon themselves to carry out the fatwa. This was repeated many times during the interview with Mr. Shaban and my other guests, and so I don't think any of our viewers will misunderstand it.
Egypt's prime minister condemned the incident, as did Al-Azhar, the Sunni Muslim world's highest authority.
I know that you've met Bassem Youssef and you've interviewed him and you've invited him to the channel. I know that you've met Bassem Youssef and you've interviewed him.
We criticize him because what he represents is negative and not beneficial to our society. Yes, he's funny, with a sharp wit, and you and I may like to watch him, but the intention is bad and his program is not useful to our young people or to the country.
You spoke about the freedom and the newfound freedom and that your channel is now a result of this freedom, but doesn't that go for Bassem as well?
But he's not using this freedom properly. He's offensive to the president and the Islamists. He picks on certain Muslim scholars and makes fun of them in every episode. So he doesn't have a noble cause and is clearly working against the Islamists.
Aren't you open to criticism?
Yes, but criticism has its rules. He can criticize what I say if it's factually or religiously wrong, but if he's just throwing fun for its own sake or putting others into a bad light to make people feel hatred, then this is not useful.
I couldn't have visited two more polar opposite examples of the free speech spectrum in Egypt. Both Bassem Youssef and Al Hafiz TV claim to be protecting Islam, and both are pushing to the limit their right to freedom of expression. Millions watch them, and for me, this speaks volumes about where my country is right now. Polarized between the Islamists and the liberals, with little common ground. To find out where the state stands on freedom of expression, I turn to Egypt's new constitution. And look at this, in part two, rights and freedoms, Article 45 says, and I quote, freedom of thought and opinion shall be guaranteed. But then listen to Article 31, same section. It says, again I quote, insulting or showing contempt towards any human being shall be prohibited. Well, those two clauses appear to be at odds with each other, surely. So, not a lot of clarity there. And the bigger issue is that this very document is disputed by the liberals and Coptic Christians, who argue that it serves only the Islamist powers in the country. Meanwhile, for us ordinary folk, the contradictions and chaos of post-revolutionary Egypt continue to challenge us. Listen to Maisa's story. She's an Egypt Air stewardess and has been campaigning for years along with her colleagues to be able to wear the hijab or the headscarf at work.
So Maisa, first of all, thank you so much for receiving us in this lovely home. We were just saying the air is different here because it's in the outskirts of Cairo and we're sitting in your garden surrounded by your plants and the lovely flowers. Tell me when you started wearing the hijab, the headscarf, at work.
Actually, starting from 1999, there was a female pilot. She was an Egyptian and her name was Nirin Salem, Captain Nirin Salem. She wanted to wear the veil and she told the company, I'm inside the cockpit. There's no difference if I'm there with my hijab on or without it. So as a result, she was fired. Then in 2001, another air hostess, Amira Mansi, started to collect signatures from the air hostesses who wanted to wear the veil on board the plane. And one of our colleagues, he was a purser, he took her to an office inside the airport, and it was Amn al-Dawla, which is
state security.
State security, yes. And they mistreated her and they threatened her and they told her, how dare you ask for something like this if the first lady herself is not wearing the veil? They treated her as if she was like a terrorist or something. It's all because she wanted to wear her hijab, as if the veiled women are part of the ignorant class of the society, which is completely wrong. And now we're trying to change this idea. So after the revolution, we knew that the TV presenters had a case and they won their case. So when we knew about it, I started thinking, what about us? It's now or never.
So what did you do?
For me, it started 2 months after the revolution.
March 2011.
Yes. After praying, alhamdulillah, I decided one of the Fridays that were very crowded in the Tahrir Square, I took a board with me. I made like a copy of Egyptair logo and I wrote down in Arabic, give the air hostesses the right and the freedom to wear their veils.
This is clearly very emotional for you. You're tearing up.
It was very hard, and the decision to go, you were only supported by God, alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. I felt that I will go and I will do this because I do believe that this is what God wants us to do. So I noticed the cameras in the corners of the square. And I was trying to go and to put it higher in front of the camera. And four or five journalists invited me for a TV shows.
When did it actually happen that you then were able to be an Egypt Air stewardess on a plane and actually wear hijab? When did that start?
Thank God. What happened was when President Morsi was chosen as a president, his wife, the first lady, I met her in her house and she's the one who went and she served me juice to drink and she was very nice with me and she told me, what is your problem? So she fixed me an appointment with one of the responsibles in Egypt Air. And on the second day I went, I met him and he told me, Maisa, starting from tomorrow, you're allowed to wear your veil. So this first day when I was going into the office with my veil on, I was like very proud, as if you're going through a wall. Actually, there's No fear, no more fear. If this doesn't come out on the surface after such a revolution, when will it come?
Is this it now? I mean, has Egypt now adopted this policy, or could they pull back?
Well, I'm pessimistic, so I guess...
Pessimistic?
Farhana. Optimistic. Optimistic, sorry. Yeah, and because some decisions, you can never go back. You can never go back. Especially something related to the veil.
Never go back. Well, that's indeed a reason for Maysa to be Farhana, or optimistic. But the irony is that after years of campaigning, she only achieved her ambition to wear the hijab when the new First Lady, President Morsi's wife, paid attention to her cause. While the former First Lady, Suzanne Mubarak, was the person that originally stopped the headscarf from being worn on Egypt Air. So Maysa won her campaign to wear the hijab, not through any legal constitutional justice, but through an informal access to power, much like the old Egypt. Much, much later that day, I lost my own battle with religious expression on a night out in Cairo.
We're in a Nile boat called the Pharaoh. It is one of the most exclusive, most glamorous places that young people here hang out in. And the whole decor is of gold and lush. Everything around here speaks of money, lots and lots of money.
It's midnight, and my producer has dragged me along to the deck of a Nile boat in Cairo that pumps out rave music. As we get to the top of the queue to pay our $25 to get in, well, you can hear it for yourself. I'm asked to leave for wearing my headscarf.
So I take this off and then I'm allowed in?
If the promoter tells you we don't allow VIP people in, then it's his choice. You understand? It's his private party. It's his choice.
But I don't understand these rules. What are the rules? That I'm not allowed to come in because I...
Mike, I'm really sorry.
You do understand this is very discriminatory, I mean, because of what I wear.
It's a private party, you understand?
But I was invited to that private party.
I understand.
So? I just don't understand why in my own country, I am not allowed in some places because of what I wear on my head.
That's what clubbing is, my friend. I'm really sorry to cause any inconvenience, guys.
This is unbelievable, you guys. It's so unacceptable.
Hello.
And to add to the surreal experience, I bump into one of my good friends, who's going into the party, without a hijab, of course.
I think it's ridiculous as well. I don't understand why this is happening.
I kind of looked at them in absolute horror.
It's disgusting and it's discriminatory, and there's no need for this to happen in our country. It's definitely divisions of class and our.
So you think, they have. So you think they think I'm a different class?
They definitely think you're a different class.
So they think I don't look good enough to go in?
Apparently, yeah. You have to have flashy clothes and you have to show skin in order to be acceptable.
And this is post-revolution. This is the Egypt where everyone is fighting for their freedom. But apparently I'm not free to get into some place because of what I wear.
I would have expected this to happen to me under Mubarak's rule. But with Egypt's new democracy and a new constitution, it's exasperating to see that things still haven't changed. The stewardess from Egypt Air, Maysa, got what she wanted and is now proud of the fact that she can wear her headscarf on the job. Despite there being a constitution, there's still no actual court ruling or parliamentary legislation to guarantee her or others that right, just as there's no legislation guaranteeing me the right to go where I want in my country wearing a headscarf.
This is unprofessional. Lala, this is not professional.
They're really important.
Lala, خلاص. Khalifa, خلاص.
We're back in Cinema Radio Theater now. Bassem has invited us to his live show. I tell him about my visit to Al Hafiz channel, or Qanat Al Hafiz, a channel he has strong views about.
I'm here to tell them that they are not the sole speakers of this religion, and they will not use religion against us.
Well, basically, they say that you're targeting religious figures, you're targeting Islamist media, you're targeting Islamist figures.
Of course I am targeting, of course I am. I mean, I don't deny it. I mean, we are also followers of that religion, and they just want to use it. I mean, this religion is not exclusive to them. I'm quite angry about how they use religion. As a matter of fact, I consider myself actually much more protective about Islam than them. So, yeah.
What do you say to someone who's saying you're imposing this very westernized media model on a very conservative society like the Egyptian society?
Nobody owns humor. I mean, who said the West can own anything?
Finally, where are you hoping to go with this?
I'm hoping to actually finish my 3 seasons in peace.
Then what?
Maybe retire.
Then go back to being a heart surgeon.
Maybe I'll just go fishing. I'll just go somewhere and fish.
Bassem Youssef, I will leave you in peace and I'll leave you to get ready for your show tonight.
Thank you very much.
Bassem Youssef's show is hugely popular, as is Al Hafiz TV. But they're not alone. There are scores of other media outlets on TV, online, and radio that are providing entertainment and news to the Egyptian public. The Egyptians are famous for their sense of humor, famous too for their love of political discourse, and it's exciting to see so much of it being expressed in Egypt today. But the question is the state robust enough to tolerate such diversity of opinion, and can the government protect the right to free speech and freedom of expression at the same time as dealing with all the other challenges it faces? Things like unemployment, security, and the economy. In our next program, I'll be traveling across Egypt to test its economic health. Have those basic revolutionary demands for bread, freedom, and social justice been met? Join me next week on Egypt's Challenge.